I really did love the bathhouse, which was such a simple set. And that was actually, we built that in the stables, what were the horse stables on the grounds of the villa where we were filming.
You kind of have to ride that line and give them just enough, but not too much to where there's no mystery left. Hello and welcome everyone on We Need to Talk About Oscar. Today I am joined by Adam Riemer, the production designer of Immaculate, who I believe just 2 weeks ago must have been at the film's premiere at South by Southwest. Hi Adam, how was that festival experience?
Hi, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here. The festival experience was amazing. Seeing the film premiere in such a big venue, it was, you know, a 1,200 person theater, and it was a really big energy audience. And it doesn't compare with any, you know, film watching experience I've ever had to see one of your own films in that environment. Really very exciting.
Yeah, I can imagine. It must have been amazing. But now I'm going to jump back in time just for a little bit, as I wanted to ask you about your background. I read that you have a degree in architecture, but how did you become a production designer in the film industry?
Yeah, so it was kind of a long and winding path. I did get my degree in architecture. And when I graduated Penn State, I moved to New York, where I wound up working for a set building company called Ready Set. I answered an ad in the New York Times for set carpenter. And I didn't even know what that was, but I had some carpentry skills. So I worked in the studio photography industry for a number of years as a scenic painter, carpenter, and then took over sort of managing that shop and doing in-house design for them. So that was my introduction to scenic design, but it wasn't film related. I took a break from that and did some design build architecture for a while, small scale residential. And then I had moved out to Portland, Oregon, where a TNT series called Leverage was moving from LA to Portland and they needed a set designer or draftsman. And someone knew that I had some skills in that area and recommended me. And that was my in to the television industry. And then I kind of worked my way through a couple of different shows up into assistant art director, and then finally production designer on an NBC series called Grimm. And then shortly after that, started focusing more on feature film, pushing my career in that direction.
And was Michael Mohan the one that brought you on in this project?
He was. And he actually, so when I was working on that television series, Grimm, I art directed that for 4 years. And then I was the production designer. I got bumped up for the last two seasons. And then my very next project was Everything Sucks, working with Mike Mohan, his writing partner, Ben York Jones, on a series for Netflix, a 90s set high school story. And so Mike's actually the one who gave me my first production design credit on a new show. And that was just the start of a relationship that's lasted for many years. We also did The Voyeurs together for Amazon several years ago. And all of those shows, we were working with Elijah Christian, the director of photography, and Sydney Sweeney. So we've kind of been a little family together through all those projects.
I heard that Immaculate came together quite quickly. How much time did you have for preparation?
Oh, well, we were in Rome for, I think, about 6 or 7 weeks prior to filming. I had been working from home in Portland with Michael as we were going through, the script was going through a lot of changes. We were trying to figure, you know, because as I'm sure you've heard, it started as sort of a different sort of boarding school story, became a convent story, and the location changed to Italy. And so, you know, I was talking to him basically every day as we were working through like what the implications of that were for story and setting. And we probably did that for about 6 weeks. And then we got to Rome and had about 7 weeks to prep on site.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through a bit on the location scouting process?
Sure. Well, I mean, you're scouting in Rome and metropolitan Rome and the surrounding areas. So every day is like going on a grand tour. You're going from like ancient ruins to medieval castles to Renaissance villas, and you're seeing the most amazing spaces. It can be a bit overwhelming because everything is beautiful, everything is photogenic, and trying to piece together our convent from, you know, a lot of different locations, you know, that was a big challenge. But I think, you know, initially, like going into the project, my vision for it was a way more sort of Spartan, bare, very ascetic kind of environment, almost like the medieval raw stone, very sort of cold, empty, barren spaces, like you imagine, you know, a monastery or a convent might be. But as we started to see more and more locations and figure out how we could put it together, we started to embrace what you see in the final film, which is way more of sort of like a lush, decorative environment. And that kind of, you know, that's one of the things that just kind of comes from the prep process, is that you may have a certain direction you think you want to take the look of the movie, but then as you're in the spaces and working with the director, the DP, and putting it all together, things start to shift, your vision starts to gel. And once we found sort of an anchor location, which was this a villa from the, I think, 16th century, that sort of became an anchor point for the look of the movie in a lot of ways. And that helped us drive decision-making about the other pieces.
But everything was shot on location, right? Like not in studio, but the actual places.
The only thing shot in the studio was the confessional, which was built on stage at Shinichita. And all other pieces, I mean, there were, to a greater and lesser degree, modifications of the locations to make them work. Sometimes we had to bring set pieces in to, you know, shape the rooms or create, you know, the right geometry for blocking action, etc. Most of that was achieved with set dressing. But yes, other than the confessional, all on location. And I think we had 8 locations just to make up the convent. So aside from early in the film, you see the customs or immigration office and like the exterior of the train station. And then basically the whole movie takes place in the convent. But that was made up of a lot of different pieces kind of like spread all over the place to put it together.
You said that the convent came together from about 8 different locations. And I imagine those buildings must be of different ages and conditions. Could you tell us how you piece them together to still present a complete and consistent look for the film?
Sure. That was really one of the biggest challenges, because we couldn't find all 30 or so sets that we needed for the convent in one place. And so really, as I think I mentioned, there was like one anchor location, which was a villa on like these big grounds outside of the city that really just had like a lot of like rich architectural value and material, including like these Tromelin murals and marble floors. And it offered us, you know, enough spaces to do the cardinal's office and Cecilia's room and the refectory and some good exteriors. And so once we kind of locked into that and we knew that we were embracing this look that was sort of way more architecturally rich and detailed, then that put us in a good spot to like to decide on those other pieces. So for example, we knew we needed a chapel that had sort of the grandeur of some of the spaces we were seeing at the convent. So we looked at a lot of churches and finally landed on this basilica in Nepi they see in the movie, which was just like the most beautiful space and had so much drama for like the moment of Cecilia seeing it for the first time, or for when she sort of coronated as Mary. And then the cloistered courtyard she sees when she first arrives at the convent, that was at the Museo Dario Pamphili in the center of Rome. And that was like one element that we thought we really needed for the convent, but that our main villa location didn't offer. So again, we looked at loads of cloisters until we found the one that felt like it could blend seamlessly. And it's like when you're trying to put together something at so many locations, I feel like, you know, it's sort of like you're weaving a tapestry, and, you know, each location like brings another thread in and informs the next one. So like as we go, I like to just sort of like cover my walls with photos of the locations and put them next to each other and figure out how they can fit together in a cohesive way.
And was it mostly furnishing that did this job, or did you have to do some construction work on like some of the bases, or was that even allowed in those like historical places?
Yeah, there were a lot of limitations on what we could do in terms of construction or painting. But in some, like, for example, the location where we had the hospice ward and doctor's office, we had to do a bit of construction, a bit of paint. It was in pretty rough shape. And so we had to kind of fix it up a little bit. The lab set, which was like one of the most challenging sets in the movie, required a lot of construction in terms of wall elements, doors, you know, some built-in lighting and that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it was decoration. They all were basically empty spaces. Especially the villa itself was just completely bare of anything. So we had to furnish everything. And a lot of that is, you know, about like how we treat the windows to create like beautiful, moody lighting effects, how we light the spaces, including like all of the candlelight that we tried to rely on really heavily throughout, and, you know, the furnishing artwork, etc.
Yeah, I did have a question about the candlelight, because I did notice that many of the scenes used candlelight in the film, but I did wonder, like, how did that go with lighting? And did you have like some takes that you had to retake because the candlelight didn't work? Or was it candlelight and additional lighting, or just the candlelight? What was that?
Sure. It's definitely a mix of, because we do have practical lighting in some of the sets as well. And then, of course, whatever lighting Elijah is bringing in from the instrument. So it is a blend. But you know, we were always able to tell in camera if the candlelight was working or not. So it didn't affect takes in the way that, you know, we had to redo anything. I mean, one strategy we used is for filmmaking, they're special candles that are double wick candles. So they glow twice as bright as a normal candle. And then there's even triple wick candles. So we had custom candles manufactured in single, double, and triple wick. So depending on the needs of the scene, we could have whichever candles worked best to create the best balance, the other lighting, or like whatever the desired effect was in the space.
And going back to the decorations, due to the religious context, I guess you must have worked with like a very limited source of decorative elements. But how did you decorate, and what were your intentions with those decorations here?
Sure. Well, I was amazed at how much of that kind of decor is available in Rome. And there are prop houses that have been around for decades, if not longer, that it's interesting. Like when I first went to prop houses in Rome, I was just blown away by the scale of them and by the age of the stuff that was available. Because you go into like a prop house in LA, right? And you're seeing like a much more contemporary collection of stuff. Like, sure, there's antiques, but when you go to a prop house in Rome, you're looking at stuff that's hundreds of years old, you know, and like that's what's available to you. And just because it's the center of Catholicism, and I think, you know, there's a lot of filmmaking done there with religious themes, we're able to find a lot of stuff readily available from those prop houses. But then there's also, because it's the center of Catholicism, there's also a lot of places that essentially supply churches with statuary and artwork and, you know, all sorts of the props and decorations that we needed to fill them out. And I think it, like in terms of intention, like I had spoke before about how like we had originally envisioned this as a much more austere, sort of barren environment, like one might traditionally think of like a convent or a monastery. But, you know, once we started to sort of like embrace this other look that, you know, sort of created, there's almost like a strangeness to sort of like how lush and decorative the world was. Then we knew in terms of like the richness of fabrics and, you know, the sort of ornateness of like wood furniture, candelabras, chandeliers, like all of this stuff started to become like a much more elevated kind of world, which I think like it works really well in some ways for the story, because Cecilia is having this experience that's completely new to her. And we're creating this world that is like so lush and full of detail, then there's almost there's something like unexpectedly eerie about that kind of environment for this kind of story to take place in.
And now that you mentioned Cecilia, because the story takes place in a convent, I imagine that you had, again, limited opportunities to show the personalities of the characters. There was, however, Alvaro Mortis character, Father Tedeschi, and we did see his personal space in the film, The Laboratory. Can you talk a bit more about the lab and how that showcased his personality?
Sure. Yeah, the lab was probably like the single most challenging set, both creatively and logistically. We first see the lab at this very pivotal moment in the story where it's revealed to the audience for the first time really what Father Tedeschi has been up to. And it's the first set we see that is really feels like a much different kind of space than anything we've seen so far. And so it needed to have that impact of that reveal while still feeling like a believable part of the world of the rest of the story. And so one strategy toward achieving that was that, you know, we were in this military fort from like the 18th century, deep underground in these sort of like vaulted spaces. And it had some of the architecture that kind of aligned with other spaces in the movie in terms of like the vaults and arches and stuff, but it was a little more pared down, a little more practical, a little less decorative. And then in terms of set dressing, you know, the movie takes place in sort of like, it's sort of a timeless, you know, we never really identify whether it's present day or what, but the set dressing in the lab was sort of this mix of like really old antique biochemistry equipment with, you know, contemporary instruments. We had this sort of like built-in LED lighting or these sort of industrial pendant lamps, but then also, you know, like sort of the warm tungsten light and the wood burning fireplace. So it was really this like mashup of like what could be more contemporary scientific equipment with these other sort of artifacts of like a past time, right? And so I think that kind of spoke to Father Tedeschi's character in the way that, you know, he's sort of like reaching deep into the past to try to like do this new thing with science. And yeah, it was, I think the challenge there was really like, it had to be a bridge between like the world of the convent as we had known it so far, and then like moving deeper and further away from that into the catacombs and finally the ancient ruins where the final scene plays out. And then on top of that, there were a lot of logistical issues. I mean, it was a tough, tight space with limited access, and we had to have all of these special effects from the wood burning fire to the cross brand, which was, you know, fabricated with integral LED lights inside of it, and breakaway test tubes. You know, Cecilia had to be able to douse the whole set with water, and then we had to dry it and reset it. We had smoke, fire, air cannons, all the action that takes place around that door and through it, and then finally the stunt of knocking the door down. So it was a lot of tricky technical things to get done in a tight space. And we shot all of the lab material in 2 days. So it was tight on time as well. But in the end, I think it was really effective in kind of being that pivotal point in terms of visual storytelling, but also like being a bridge, you know, that kind of held the world together. I think the effects, you know, played out pretty well in the end.
Yeah, I think I can assure you that it did play out well. I remember watching the film with my partner, and at the point when we step into Father Tedeschi's lab, we both looked at each other at the same time and like squirming because we realized what is going to happen and what had happened. Yeah, so it did have that effect.
Oh, good. Glad to hear.
And also reflecting on something you said in this comment, because I remember me taking a note that the film does feel very timeless, because you can basically put the convent anywhere between the Middle Ages and the modern day. So yeah. And one tiny detail that I wanted to mention that I really liked was that cross-shaped table that we saw after Cecilia's initiation ceremony. Yeah, that was also a very cool moment. Yeah.
That was a really fun set because it was like, it was so extravagant. I mean, the amount of like candles and candelabras and food and flowers, and like it was just so over the top. But that one, the one shot from above, that's a direct reference to Black Narcissus, where there's a similar shot from above where you see them all eating and the tables are in the cross shape. So that was, yeah, that was one little Easter egg that we pulled directly from that reference.
Now we know that the most challenging set was the lab. And I'm curious, what was your favorite set to do in the film?
I mean, the lab is up there for, because I love a challenge, and I love like solving those, you know, the trickier problems that, you know, really can pull the story together. But in terms of like a sort of like an ambiance or just the sort of the visual love, I really did love the bathhouse, which was such a simple set. And that was actually, we built that in the stables, what were the horse stables on the grounds of the villa where we were filming. And so it required like a quite a bit of cleanup to make it work for the bathhouse. But we built that octagonal pool within it and installed the showers and plumbed everything with hot water and steam and brought in like those gauzy linen curtains and, you know, some of the set dressing. It was just a beautiful set, like soft light and steam and the reflections off the water. And it's this place in moments in the story where things are becoming very tense and very sort of unknown for Cecilia. It felt like this little respite, this little place of peace. Of course, now we know that like it also becomes the site of some of the more shocking moments of the film, right? So it had this great contrast of being this like very peaceful space where then still things are taking a nasty turn. But I just love some of the visuals, the overhead of her in the water, or sort of like the wide shot with a big arch wrapping over the pool. I just thought were some of like my favorite images from the film.
Yeah, you kind of shocked me with this, because like I thought that the bathhouse was actually like one of the, you know, like the actual villa parts, you know, like something that has already existed, and like that you said that actually horses were kept there. Like, it's pretty amazing what you did.
And there's like these old, like the original iron, like horse troughs mounted along the wall where they would feed, which we turned into like these sort of steaming braziers, you know, like just to create another element in there. But yeah, it's really fun when you can repurpose a space that's so completely different from what you're trying to get out of it. And really with pretty simple moves, you know, it doesn't take a lot, just some, you know, some careful moves, and you can really turn it around.
And what went into your research? Like, what was the vision that you had? Did you have some references?
Well, I did watch a lot of nun movies, although I was focused less on the nunsploitation movies and more on sort of like more contemporary nun dramas, like Pawlikowski's film Ida or Pulverhoven's Benedetta. We all really liked Black Narcissus as a reference. For one, going away back in the day, and that was definitely part of the inspiration for like sort of the grandeur of the place that we tried to bring to our story. Other than that, like my visual research, you know, relies partly on film and partly on just like digging through the enormous amount of information on the internet and just pulling images that inspire me and putting together, you know, color palettes, material palettes, and style sheets, you know, that start to add up to a continuity of vision. And then that's a starting point. And, you know, I had done that before I even left for Rome. But of course, I like shared that with Michael and he had shared it with the producers. And, you know, it's kind of like a starting point for us to talk about it. But certainly that starts to shift. And it's always interesting to look back into those like earliest lookbooks of like what pieces from that like wound up in the movie and which pieces like really shifted, you know.
Of course, this wasn't your first horror film, as you've worked on Insidious, but is your approach different in any way when you do a horror film versus basically any other genre?
I mean, certainly, like, I think the horror genre has its own specific challenges. And a lot of that has to do with integrating, you know, some of the tropes like jump scares and like how do you establish the environment of the geography within a set. You know, there's a moodiness to horror movies that you might not be going for in other genres. And so how do you use color palette, materials, lighting, practical lighting on sets to help establish that mood? But I think it comes down a little bit more for me to whether or not the story is heavily character driven or if it's more story driven. And so a lot of times in some genres, like you have very specific characters and they have a certain arc in the story and they have sets, you know, they have anchor sets that are their spaces. And so you're putting a lot of attention into how you craft those spaces to support that character or to support that character's arc, right? Whereas in this story, we really have, I mean, Cecilia is the character, right? But she is not in her own space. She's been taken from her place and put into this very foreign place. So in a sense, you're creating spaces less to support the character and more to kind of create a sense of unease or disparity, you know, between character and setting. So I think that would be the main difference in a story like this is that I'm designing more to like the vision of the place and the vision of story more so than trying to support character or establish character.
As for uneasy moments in the film, I think one of the strongest was the chase down in the catacombs. And recently I've talked to Christian Mazzini, the film's editor, and he said that you were only able to shoot 15 minutes at a time down there. How was that experience? And just in general, how did you prepare that place for the shooting?
To be honest, the art department had very little intervention to do in the catacomb. It was the only set really that was basically shoot ready because it was a real catacomb, which we found on private estate land outside of Rome. And as with many of these locations of antiquity, they're very particular about what you can and can't do in them. You can't make any big modifications. You have to leave things largely undisturbed. So with the exception of like, I think we had to put in one little set wall and we had some props in the catacomb. But other than that, it was kind of hands off for us. But it was an interesting experience shooting down there because you're deep below ground. Humidity is high, which is tricky for camera lenses. Oxygen is low, which is tricky for working. It's dark. And the crews, we have to keep a very small crew down there. We have to bring them back up to the surface every so often to get some fresh air and reoxygenate before going back down again. So it was a challenging environment to shoot, but it had the authenticity of the real thing. I think that's what makes it, you know, really special.
And as for, in general, for the look of the film, how much creative freedom did you get? Or how involved were Michael Mohan or Sydney in the processes? I think it was a love project for her, so I assume that she was very involved.
Yeah, she was very involved. But I have the benefit of having worked with them on two other projects. And so they put a lot of faith in my judgments. And so oftentimes, like it's a process of determining specifically what elements I know they will want to have creative input on and sign off on, and knowing which ones I can take and run with. I mean, because there's way too much involved in all of the arts department elements for a movie like this, for all of them to be a conversation and for all of them to go through a process of approval. So like, which are the key ones, you know, certain hero props, or like the look of the fetuses or the, you know, partially formed fetuses in jars, you know, things like that need to be, you know, put up for discussion and maybe modified. And, you know, it's more of a collaborative process to get to an end result there. But Mike, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love working with Michael, is because we, you know, we have a good relationship. We have a shorthand and, you know, he puts a lot of faith in me that I'll make the right decisions just based on the, you know, the process that we're going through together.
You mentioned your previous works, and I know that you're here to talk about Immaculate, but I really have to bring in The Voyeurs because, first of all, I really like that film, and those apartments absolutely stood out for me. They were beautiful. And I've seen it on your website that you actually shot that film in a studio. I guess in that case, you had much more freedom, but can you compare some differences between shooting on location versus in the studio?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I do have a lot more creative control when I'm building sets from the ground up. Absolutely. And like I was saying before, that was a case where I had these four characters And most of the movie takes place in their two apartments, their two worlds. So that's an instance where I am, like, I do have a lot of control of building sets specifically to character and to support character and to show the evolution of those spaces as, you know, character arc develops. But you have also a lot more control, like production wise. You're not subject to time of day or weather or temperature. You know, it really frees up the schedule for production when you're indoors to be able to shoot for weeks on spaces where you have total control of all the elements. In that particular film, we had identified in like an early pre-scout of the city, we had identified an exterior for those apartments that we felt was, like, for me, was the right stylistic look for the two characters and had sort of the geography we needed for the relationship of them. And so that was a great starting point for me then to recreate that relationship on stage, but then, like, have all of the creative freedom for the interiors of those. And that's, to this day, that's the largest set I've ever designed. It was two apartments, about 2,500 square feet each. They were lifted a story off the ground with three stories of exterior facade wrapping around a courtyard, a gigantic custom translight, like a day-night backing of the city that we built in the biggest soundstage in Montreal. So that was a monstrous set build, and a really, really fun one. Yeah, still one of my favorites.
And which one do you prefer in general, when you can build the whole set in a studio or when you can choose the locations?
Well, I mean, I do come from an architecture background, so I love to build. And yeah, I'd always prefer to build, but it really comes down to where you can allocate resources within the budget of the film. All things being equal, if you had all the money in the world, sure, build it all. But I think a lot of times, like, you just have to kind of weigh what you can get out of a stage build that's going to ultimately save money or benefit production and give you more creative control, more shooting control, versus what makes sense to pick up on location. And sometimes it's a matter of scope. The sets, the locations that we shot on Immaculate, to create those entirely on a soundstage from nothing would be enormously expensive and enormously time consuming, because these are, like, these amazing historical spaces. They're huge, they're ornate, they have, you know, murals and marble and stone column arches, vaults, all things that would be very expensive to pull off in a build. So I think in this case, it was the right decision, especially for the scale of the movie and the time frame we had, to really find everything on location so that we could get as much production value from what exists, and then be able to embellish it to fill out sort of the mood of our story.
Is there a genre that you would like to try, like a type of film that you would love to get your hands on?
Well, I sometimes think, I love watching historical dramas, and I've never really done a period piece. What Everything Sucks, which was set in the 90s, would be the closest. And I've had to do, like, little scenes, flashbacks, bits and pieces that are period over the years. But I would like to tackle, like, a larger sort of historical epic, a war epic or something like that. But I have been veering into this world of thriller and horror, and those are both genres that I do enjoy designing very much. And I'd like to keep working in that vein and just sort of expanding the scope of work that I'm doing in those genres.
And to wrap up the interview, I again have a question regarding your future. Do you already have a new project in sight or something that would pique your interest?
Not right now. I mean, there's a couple things in development that I've heard kicking around, but I don't have anything locked in for the immediate future. You know, it's been a tough year for all of us in the film industry with strikes and a really, really slow startup to the year. I think we're about 25% volume of production in the States from where we were a year ago. So we're all just trying to be patient. You know, it's exciting to hear about some opportunities that are potentially upcoming, but for the moment, I've just got to kind of wait it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd be happy to follow you up on your next projects as well.
Thanks. I mean, I'm hopeful that I'll be working with Mike Mohan on whatever his next project is. So we'll see what comes up there.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam, very much for your time. It was really great having you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. Our next guest on the We Need to Talk About Oscar podcast has worked on features like Columbus or The Night House. And today we are going to talk about Immaculate. Please welcome cinematographer Elijah Christian. Hi, Elijah. How is it going?
It's going well. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. The film's been out for about a week and it's basically everywhere. How are you feeling?
It feels nice to have worked on something that is getting attention, whether it's, you know, it's kind of a polarizing movie and it was intended as such, but it's just nice to have something out in the world that people are paying attention to.
We like to start our interviews by asking our guests about their core memories that made them fall in love with films or made them decide on it and go into filmmaking. Are there any specific moments in your life to which you can attribute these feelings or decisions?
I don't know if there's like a really specific thing. I think that my earliest memories of experiencing movies that were maybe not in the mainstream at the time or not typical was my dad was always really into martial arts movies. And so we would watch a lot of Bruce Lee movies and stuff like that as a kid. But then he also introduced me to Kurosawa. And so like Ran and Rashomon, these are movies that I saw pretty young that really just kind of, I feel like that really was my introduction to world cinema, so to speak, but just like a different type of film than was mainstream at the time or what was, you know, I was used to watching as a kid.
And to steer our conversation a little bit towards Immaculate, correct me if I'm wrong, but you and Michael were actually college roomies and then you went on to work on a TV show called Everything Sucks, a film 2021's The Warriors, and now a second movie, Immaculate. By the way, all three starring Sydney Sweeney. How has your collaboration and work together evolved throughout the years? Is this how you imagined or what you dreamed about?
Yeah, we were roommates in college our senior year, and I shot his senior thesis movie. And then we both needed to get jobs, and I started doing grip work on like little indie movies and eventually TV and then bigger movies. And all the while, Mike and I would shoot little projects, little shorts and things on weekends or whatever. And we made our first feature in 2008, 2009 that we shot over weekends over the period of about 2 years and made it for, I think, $20,000. Then, you know, from there, we've made several shorts and other features as well. So it's like there's been a ton of collaboration over the years, and it's been a really great relationship. You know, we've remained good friends and it's been really nice to sort of grow together.
You've worked on horror films before, like the one I mentioned in the introduction, The Night House. What would you say is your general relationship with them? Plus, visually, what were your influences for Immaculate?
Yeah, so I have a kind of not a straightforward relationship with horror. I really appreciate the older horror films. I think of like the top being probably Rosemary's Baby, The Shining, The Exorcist. Like those to me are really what I love. And I never really got into more of the horror like when I was growing up, like the Freddies and the Jasons and stuff like that. I really didn't click with those at first. It took a while for me to sort of get into that style. But I think it's still, when I think about horror, I still think back to that early work. I think for Immaculate, definitely Rosemary's Baby was a huge influence for Mike and I, just in terms of the circumstances of the main character. And we also just loved the look of it, that very grainy feel. And also, I think for me, Jack Cardiff's work in The Black Narcissus was really the main influence. I just love that movie. Is just like a painting, you know, it's just gorgeous. And I just wanted to try and just sort of, I don't know, pay a little homage to that work.
Balancing the cold and dark walls and at the same time, figuratively, the feeling or atmosphere of the convent with some warmer aspects like the blood and red lights must have had its challenges. Also, the absence of light is a crucial tool of the genre and of the film itself. How do you get to the right amount of each? Like, I know it's not like there is an official international pact or ruling that says what's the ideal or perfect, but for you, for Michael, for your crew.
Yeah, it's kind of a case-by-case basis, but you're trying to embody the atmosphere of the scene or the mood of the scene. Obviously, certain factors go into it, certain practical things, but yeah, it's really trying to visually portray the character's mindset or what's happening to them in the moment. So it requires a lot of close work with Mike, just like figuring out what the scene is about, you know, what needs to happen in the scene, the practical aspects of where the camera's seen during the scene, like what directions are we looking, how far is the camera moving, how wide are we. You know, that dictates how far away the lights need to be or what can be lit, honestly. And then a lot of it also is working with Adam Riemer, in this case, a production designer, and just trying to create the atmosphere that is appropriate for the movie. And, you know, in this case, there was a lot of candlelight, there's firelight. It is more present day, but it's still, the setting is still very... It's an old convent, so it needs to have that classic feel.
In connection to the lack of light and the candles you just mentioned, this might be a bit of a dumb question, but is it even possible to light and then shoot a scene solely with candles? And if not, how do you light it in order to make it look as realistic, as lifelike as possible?
Yeah, it is possible for sure. I mean, it depends, you know, how many candles you have. You know, we did a lot of testing before shooting. I knew that we were going to be shooting in actual catacombs underneath Rome. You know, when we went and scouted them, it's very claustrophobic down there. There's, you know, some of the ceilings are less than 6 feet tall. There's places, you know, where you could bump your head or there's very narrow passageways. So I just couldn't figure out how we could actually, you know, hide lights in there. So part of the testing process was looking at cameras that could handle low light really well. And then, you know, fast lenses to pair with them specifically for those moments. And then also I tend to, if I can help it, like not try to fake the light as much as possible. So I do really like it. If Sydney's holding a candle, for example, that candle is what's lighting her. You know, there might be other lights in the scene, but usually they're more for the room itself or the setting and not as much for her. So it's more of like she's lighting herself in that case. And then we, you know, trying to add other lights in the scene to just sort of like give us perspective of where we are, right? Because if you have a candle, it's light in a very small area around itself, but not the rest of the room.
Last week, I spoke to the film's composer, Will Bates, and we talked about the beginning of the film when Cecilia is shown around the convent and how it is shot in a not too fast-paced fashion, some at times even playful music playing in the background. And then there are those segments where you had to navigate the halls and walls, or for example, near the end, what you just mentioned, we get a chase scene in the catacombs. I'd have two questions in regard to this. Cinematography doesn't get enough credit in general, but dare I say, recently, in the last couple of years, that has changed some. However, to be a bit more specific, we don't talk enough about the craft pacing-wise, I would say. What impact would you say your ideas and work may have had on this project, in this matter in particular?
Yeah, I think really the pacing originated from Mike in terms of him thinking through how he wanted the rhythm of the edit to work. And so we would talk about how long shots needed to last, like in that introduction when she first arrives at the convent. You know, there were certain shots that really, that we did, like, you know, we went up the entire like 3, 4, 5 flights of stairs in one Steadicam shot. And, you know, we had this amazing Steadicam operator, Armando Avalon, and he was crucial in that as well. I mean, he really had great ideas and great contributions. And I think that it really, again, is just down to collaboration. And it's talking over the mood of the scene and the intent of the scene. And really from there, you go and you instinctually work, I think, a lot of the time, where it's just feeling it out. And I think that the combination of the camera and the actor really can contribute to the tension.
Absolutely. And this navigation of the set part, I've always been super fascinated with, since the basically choreography of it, getting it right, just seems like such a complicated thing from the outside. And of course, production design and everything else comes into it as well. Can you tell us a little bit about this detail, this side of your job?
Yeah, the catacombs are a real challenge. I mean, we had a very short day to shoot there. We had I think we had an 8-hour day that day, because it was a weekend, you know, it was a Saturday, and there were heavy limitations on how long we could be down there before we had to come up to the surface. And then, you know, we had to take several breaks. Like, I think every hour, 15 minutes, we had to come up for 15 minutes just to get some fresh air. We had issues with, when we initially brought the equipment down there, everything, you know, everything was covered in condensation. The lenses would fog up, all the monitors were just dripping wet. Honestly, it took the first 2 hours of our day just to get the gear acclimated to being underground. So yeah, it's, I think because it is like a labyrinth down there, it was a challenge to figure out how to tie in different tunnels and different, there are certain areas that were kind of like a landmark or distinctive areas that visually you could sort of tell where you were. But then there were other areas where it was just very confusing and could be anywhere. So it is kind of like when you're shooting in the forest and you kind of cheat, you know, where you're looking, and you can sort of play around with directions and sort of like use that confusion to sort of add to the claustrophobia and just that feeling of being in a maze and not knowing your way out. It's like the end of The Shining, for example.
You shot all that in one day, basically 6 hours after all.
Yeah.
My God. Revelations play a really important part in horrors. And the slowly swaying sheets while they are being hung out are, to me, a perfect metaphor for the decision making behind what to and what not to show at what point of the story or whenever even. Do you yourself like to rather show more or leave more to the audience's imagination and, I would say, interpretation?
Well, I think it's a balance. It's always a balance because you can go too far one way or the other. I personally am not a huge fan of stories that lay everything out in black and white and leave nothing to the imagination. So I definitely prefer something that's a little bit more mysterious or something that makes you think about it afterwards, something that leaves you wondering or that lets you come to your own conclusion. And, you know, you can be too vague as well. Like you can go the other way and just leave people confused and ultimately frustrated. So you kind of have to ride that line and give them just enough, but not too much to where there's no mystery left.
And then there is the final scene that everyone's talking about. It's like one of those moments where you can see how much thought went into what's shown, what's not, and for how long. Also, I heard Sydney talk about the experimenting behind that, the decision of no rehearsal for that specific bit of the film. And as far as I know, that's the first take we can see in cinemas. We see in the final cut. What was your experience shooting this? How did it end up looking, but especially feeling like this?
Yeah, that scene is definitely intense. You know, it's funny because Mike had started talking to me about this movie right after Sydney sent him the script. And I think he initially, I don't think that ending was the original ending. I think that was all Mike. And I think that came very early for him. I think that was something that he described to me in our very first conversation about the movie. And, you know, I definitely had some hesitation about it just because, like, if you don't, this is a scene where if you don't pull it off correctly, it's really rough. It's rough enough as it is, but like if you play it wrong, it's pretty brutal. So, you know, we definitely talked a lot about, okay, what do we show? What do we not show? How, like, what are the sounds? You know, because sound is so important, especially in this moment. And it's like the sound could have been done another way completely, and it would have completely changed people's thoughts about this, about this movie. So I think it was something that, you know, yeah, Mike was just dead on from the beginning. It was his first instinct for the end. And it was so great being there on set. And, you know, we found the location we wanted to do it. We did some camera rehearsals, just figuring out the distance that she would need to walk and, you know, basically setting up the props and things that needed to be there. But It was a dry run for Sydney, and we've worked with her a lot now, and she's just one of those actors who can just turn it on and turn it off. And it's kind of incredible. It's pretty interesting to see in person, because she can have a scene like this where she's pouring her heart out or pouring her guts out, and just like immediately Mike calls cut and she just starts smiling and like, okay, what are we doing next? You know, and it's just like she can turn it on, she can turn it off.
She's no method. You know,
she's just able to do it, and she's able to do the physicality as well. I mean, you know, there's moments that we've shot with her where, you know, she'll sit in and she'll need to cry in the scene, and she'll look around, she'll see which side the light is coming from, and she will cry at the exact moment you need her to, out of the eye that's lit. You know, it's just like her facial control is incredible. And so I think the combination of like Mike's conviction about that scene, about how it should be shot, and Sydney's ability, you know, I think it's all there on screen.
And this is a true passion project for her. Like she first came across the script and the possibility of playing the main role back when she was 16, then for some reason that fell through. And now it got made with her as the producer, her first producing gig, which I would guess adds a whole lot of pressure to her from others. And as I heard, or as I took it, from herself as well, wanting to give the maximum on all levels and to everyone. How did this pressure come across to you, and how are you coping with pressure?
Yeah, I mean, Sydney was very involved, like from the beginning. From she was there on scouts with us. She would sit in on all the production meetings and all the department meetings in terms of like, we'd talk about costumes, we would talk about the production design, we would talk about cameras, lenses, all that stuff. And she would take it all in and give her opinion and ask questions. And so that was honestly like working with her is kind of a dream because she's, you know, I started working with her when I think she was 19 on Everything Sucks. And just to see her grow, it's been really incredible. And I think that because we've worked together for so long, there's a trust there. And I think that makes it easier because like, you know, we can just be like totally upfront and honest and not, there's none of that. I don't know. There can be a lot of bullshit, if I can say it, in terms of like how people communicate. There's none of that, you know, it's very much just like, okay, this is the problem I'm having, or this is what I need to get this scene. And she, you know, she'll go to bat. And so I think that just cultivating relationships like that, you know, in general, I think that's the way you want to work, right? Is like, you want to be able to be upfront and honest with people. And when you're having a hard time, whether it's because of the time limitations or the, you know, the equipment or the manpower or all the practical things that come into making a movie, you know, you need to be able to speak frankly with your collaborators and be direct and be honest and just have that level of respect for each other.
And to wrap up and ease up a little, where can we see your work next, Elijah?
That's a great question. So I had another movie called Family that premiered at South By. And I don't know where that will end up at this point. It was well received, but it's more of an art horror. So I guess we could kind of hope that that ends up on a streamer soon or maybe out in the world. Who knows?
I've read some very reviews. So
yeah, it was a very cool project.
They really
project.
Dug it at South By.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that comes out soon. And at the moment, I'm just meeting on other projects and hoping to be starting something soon.
Elijah, thank you so much for taking the time and being here. It was really great talking to you.
Thanks so much.